Welcome to Facts Roundtable, a podcast dedicated to navigating life with food allergies across the lifespan, presented in a welcoming format with interviews and open discussions. Each episode will explore a specific topic, leaving you with the facts to know or use. Information presented via this podcast is educational and not intended to provide individual medical advice. Please consult with your personal board-certified allergist or healthcare providers for advice specific to your situation. Hi, everyone. I'm Caroline Mwasisi, and I'm your host for the Facts Roundtable podcast. I'm a food allergy parent, advocate, and the founder of the Grateful Foodie blog. Jim, welcome to the show. I'm absolutely delighted to have you on here, and I'm absolutely delighted to learn more.
That's great to be here. It's nice to be with you again.
Thank you. So we're going to dive right in. So I recall 20 years ago when my son was diagnosed with food allergies, the allergist used a skin prick test. So can you share with our listeners the history of diagnostic testing for food allergies?
That's actually quite interesting. Your son underwent a provocation challenge, and those were documented about 120 years ago for food allergy. Because it's ingesting food, it's a pretty straightforward way to understand if a reaction is caused by a certain food substance. So those provocation challenges are over 100 years old. Skin prick testing started about 50, 60 years ago. A skin prick test, for those in the audience that don't know, is when you perturb the epidermis with a needle and you introduce an antigen into the epidermis and you gauge a reaction. It's a biological reaction. It's an IgE-mediated reaction. So the protein from the food is actually introduced to the body. And if there's an immune response, you can see it through a hive. Physicians call it a wheal, but through a hive, you can understand whether or not there's a reaction. The problem with provocation challenges are not knowing the precise nature of the reaction. So just because your son reacted to a skin prick test doesn't mean he actually had the allergy. The good thing about these provocation challenges are when they're negative, they're quite meaningful. When they're positive, further investigation is warranted. And the evolution of diagnostics have really started with those provocation tests, but there hasn't been a lot of innovation. The first blood test was introduced in the United States in the late 70s, and there was some improvement made through the 80s. Phadia is the name of the company that first introduced immunoglobulin testing. The last time Phadia innovated was in 2008. And that's when they introduced component-resolved diagnostics to the United States and throughout Europe. But nothing really has happened in the clinic since then. There's been quite a bit of research. In fact, Hugh Sampson, the scientific brains behind our company, he started looking at component-resolved diagnostics with Phadia in the 1990s and started innovating on his own in his research lab. Our technology is born out of his work. And we introduced our technology this year. So in 2020, the technology really advanced in the clinic. And again, restating what I said previously, it's been more than 10 years since any allergist had the opportunity to try new technology, or any caregiver has benefited from new technology in the diagnostic sense for food allergy. Certainly these providers that treat similar conditions have had innovations like in asthma, but not in food allergy. And diagnostics over the last 30 years have improved dramatically in other indications like oncology, but not food allergy until now, until we've introduced our technology.
It's been long overdue, and we're really excited to see what's coming ahead. And that is one of the most frustrating aspects that my fellow parents experience, is feeling confident about the food allergy diagnosis and then avoiding foods that we really never needed to avoid. So then how has the ability to accurately diagnose food allergy changed over the years, and where are you seeing us headed now? You already gave us a little bit of a recap of the history, but now where do you see us going forward?
Well, for your first question, Caroline, it hasn't changed over the recent years. The ambiguity is really what drove Hugh Sampson to develop the test and to the precision that we're able to deliver. up until our test was introduced into the clinic, parents and providers were faced with not knowing whether or not they should avoid a food based on the elevated blood test or based on a wheel size of a skin prick test. Without a good history, without actually documenting a reaction caused by a specific food, you're right, the ambiguity is maddening, and it's very frustrating for the provider as well. And it takes years through this diagnostic odyssey to understand whether or not the patient, almost always children, are actually allergic to the food. And it's not until a caregiver and a patient finally agree to undergo a food challenge do they learn whether or not they're allergic. What we're introducing is, and I said it a little bit ago, a precision diagnostic tool where we're able to definitively state with the provider and the history and other tools, we're able to definitively state the presence of a food allergy or the absence of a food allergy. And it's based on specific peptides, specific epitopes associated with a protein. So in peanut, it's a very specific set of peptides. In milk, it's a different set of peptides. In egg, it's even a different set of peptides. But they're all, with exquisite resolution, they're all able to definitively correlate to an oral food challenge so that the allergist and the parent can decide what to do next. What I mean by that is, if our blood test is negative, there's a 91% probability that there won't be a reaction during ingestion. So the provider, the caregiver, and the patient can feel confident in moving ahead with an oral food challenge, because if that challenge is successful, the patient and the caregiver understand that the risk of having a reaction after accidentally ingesting the food isn't there. They can go on to maintaining a normal quality of life or returning to a quality of life that they would have without the food allergy. And conversely, if our blood test is positive, then the provider and the caregiver and patient can decide what to do next. With the advent of regulated immunotherapies, physicians and parents can decide to go on to Aimmune's product. Or in the practices that are practicing oral immunotherapy on their own, the unregulated oral immunotherapy, with our positive test, physicians can move on to that decision. And if immunotherapy is not an option, or the caregiver and patient decide not to do immunotherapy, then this strict avoidance has a more solid foundation. So we believe, even if a family decides not to do immunotherapy, we believe that there will be more confidence in living with food allergy rather than the ambiguity. If our blood test is positive, there's a 93% chance of reacting to that protein. So very much strict avoidance and carrying EpiPens is warranted, or entertaining the immunotherapeutic options.
This is really powerful information because, you know, as you know, the quality of life of living with food allergies is really extreme. And it's very hard if you're an adult and you have to travel, you really need to have good information.
One of the accomplishments that we really strived for and met was to have a concordance with oral food challenge, or to be an alternative to an oral food challenge. And that's for a variety of reasons in the clinic as well as in clinical trials. When I first met Hugh Sampson 3 years ago, it was one of the things he told me that he was so driven on in improving diagnostics. It was to give options so that people didn't have to do the oral food challenge. When the blood test is negative, and it's important to note to the food challenge because it's food, because it's how we gather culturally in our society. We share food together. Kids go to birthday parties and there's cake and ice cream and cookies. It's food. It's really important to maintain that confidence and maintain that awareness of what it is that we're putting in our mouth. So the performance of the test is one thing, but the ability to replicate a clinical procedure is really the achievement.
That's why they call it the gold standard, right? I mean, this is what we want to be able to do, is to have a food challenge and pass it. But it sounds like you're trying to create that pathway to get us to that food challenge.
That's right. That's exactly right, Caroline.
We're going to move on to the next question. Can you explain how Allergenis is using data-driven machine learning and next-generation multiplex immunoassay technology to help families like mine?
Sure. So as I mentioned earlier, diagnostics have really evolved over the last 30 years, and it really did make a huge improvement, or a big turn because of the Human Genome Project. Once the human genome was understood, people were able to start to drill down and gain more resolution. So our test is not a genetic test, it's a proteomic test. So we're going beyond the DNA and then the RNA. We're looking at specific proteins associated with the antibody antigen response. And we know that there are multiple peptides associated with this IgE-mediated reaction. So it's not a single point test. It's not like A1C for diabetes. It's not like a PSA, prostate-specific antigen, for prostate cancer. It's not a single analyte. It's multiple. And because these multiple analytes have different signals or different levels, it's called orthogonal. It's a mathematical relationship between the relative abundance or the relative presence of these peptides. When one's elevated and the other one's not elevated, it means something, and vice versa. But you can't just look at one at a time. You have to look at all of them together. So we use an algorithm to understand the relative abundance of each of these peptides. And that algorithm is then what is used to produce the test result. It's a multiplexed assay, which means, back to this idea that it's not a single point analyte, we're looking at 64 individual peptides associated with ARH2, ARH1, and ARH3, these proteins that cause the reaction. And in milk, it's different. And in egg, it's different. In each case, it's dozens of epitopes that we're measuring. So the machine learning part is one aspect of that, the algorithm used. But then as we gain more insights through the epitope signatures that we're creating and correlating the clinical information that we get back from caregivers and physicians, we're able to improve on the results that we are putting out. To date, we have about 4,000 epitope maps for peanut allergy. So we've been learning as we go on the different patterns that we are recognizing. And the last step in that will be to marry the clinical information to the unique signatures or the unique patterns that we're observing for peanut allergy. So ultimately, we'll be phenotyping this disease. Or endotyping the disease. We'll be stratifying peanut allergy similar to the way asthma is stratified, similar to the way diabetes is classified. There's a type 1 and a type 2 diabetes. Caroline, I don't know what food your son is allergic to, but moms know not every peanut allergic child is the same. Your son is different from my daughter, and yet we haven't stratified allergy. We have not stratified peanut allergy. Everybody's treated the same. And we, with epitope mapping, will be able to start to help allergists think and behave more like medical oncologists. With this precision diagnosis, we're going to be personalizing the therapy that's delivered. And that is with the advent of immunotherapies, the companies that we're collaborating with. But also, in answer to your question, it's this complex array of peptides that we're using and machine learning to constantly improve.
Thank you so much for just taking that really complex information there and breaking it down to something very simple that we can understand. But this is really exciting. I love how you mentioned becoming medical oncologists, getting really specific. And you're right, my son is allergic to peanut, tree nut, and sesame. And you're right, his allergies are very different compared to someone else. Thank you very much for that really easy to understand explanation.
We're very excited. And the allergists that we've been speaking with since we introduced the test to the clinic are quite enthusiastic as well. We have talked to nearly 100 allergists since we launched our test, and all of them are eager to use the technology.
So now what I'm wondering about is, what allergens is Allergenus currently focusing on? What are you working on right now? And then what do you see going forward?
We have research efforts in all of the major food allergens, the 8 to 10 that you would think about. From a research standpoint, we're really striving to understand these unique peptides associated with the different proteins in all of the different foods that are causing food allergies. In the clinic, our first assay is for peanut, and that's for a variety of reasons. For the immunotherapies that Immunes is now approved, DBV is working to get theirs approved. Also, most of the severe reactions in the United States and the pediatric population come from peanut. So it made sense when we did our landscape assessment, it made sense for us to start with peanut. We also really had to weigh carefully the prevalence of milk and egg in the pediatric population. Many of your listeners may know that milk is the most prevalent food allergy in kids, but a lot of kids outgrow it by age 8, and that's where peanut takes over. So while peanut is our first indication to introduce a test to the clinic, milk and egg are rapidly following. We're nearly finalized in the initial development for milk and egg to be able to move it into commercial development. We're also working with researchers around shrimp and other shellfish. We've worked very closely with Hugh Sampson and Mount Sinai on tree nuts. And we also understand the importance of sesame. So we've begun to look at, again, the peptides that are associated with that food group as well. But so in the near term, we're offering our first assays in peanut. Our next assays that we'll be introducing to the clinic are milk and egg.
And now, are these available right now for listeners, or when should they expect these tests to be available?
The peanut assay is available, and we are continuing to enhance that product line. We have two more products in development that are for peanut allergy. One of them is to assess the level of sensitivity. So not severity, but sensitivity. How much protein is ingested before a reaction would likely occur? That information is not available through blood tests or skin prick tests today. It's only information available through an oral food challenge. We're also working on a test in conjunction with immunotherapy companies as well as other researchers to help monitor response to immunotherapy. So instead of doing an oral food challenge to determine whether or not a certain level of tolerance has been obtained, we can use a blood test. Similarly, in milk and an egg, we are looking to understand how we can use our blood test to predict children that are likely to outgrow their allergy. And that's not information available in any way, in any shape, form, or fashion. You can't get that from an oral food challenge. You have to do it by trial and error. Eventually, a child won't react to milk, which meant they outgrew it. But we've already published data that shows that epitope mapping is predictive of kids that will outgrow in milk and an egg. And in fact, that was Hugh Sampson's first discovery, where the peptides associated in kids that outgrew egg allergy versus the epitopes present when kids did not outgrow egg. We've also gone on in OIT to understand how epitope mapping helps with milk. So in some kids, they respond well to oral immunotherapy with milk allergies, but in some kids, their milk allergy actually gets worse under OIT, and epitope mapping is able to tease those out. The differences in the patterns recognized in kids that respond to OIT, again, is visible through these patterns, and we've already published that. So we're working diligently to be able to get these products through the development process and into the hands of allergists in the clinic.
I can't even tell you how many times we did food challenges for my son for dairy, trying to see when he would outgrow it. And he finally outgrew it at age 16. This is amazing to have this information.
Yeah, and that's really an important phenomenon to understand at any age, is to figure out how long is this going to be a factor or an issue. And with the advent of immunotherapy, to learn that somebody's going to outgrow the milk allergy, put them on OIT right away and shorten the amount of time that they have to deal with the allergy because the immunotherapy works.
You mentioned previously the peanut test is available now. How does a listener access this test? What do they need to say to their allergist?
Depending on their geography, we have a list of providers that have allowed us to share their names with patients that are interested in the technology. So again, geographically, we can link the patient and caregiver to an allergist. Outside of those geographies, we're happy to help a patient present appropriate information to an allergist and vice versa. We're happy to reach out to a particular caregiver's preferred allergist to enable the technology in that clinic. We are working as rapidly as we can to provide the information to allergy clinics. We're primarily marketing to the clinics that routinely perform food challenges. There are about between 30 and 40 centers in the United States that do that. We also have been establishing relationships over the last 3 years with some of the most notable clinicians in the country. So again, we're working diligently to get this information into their hands so that parents throughout the country can access the technology. There's a couple of states that we're not able to market yet. We don't have the regulatory approval in the state of New York or in the state of California, but everywhere else, we're able to furnish information to an allergist that wants the test.
This technology is just blowing me away, which makes me so happy. You know, my son's 22, and so we've been doing this for 20 years. And just thinking back to 20 years ago to today just amazes me. You know, we're advancing, but like you said, we need to go a little farther. We need to become these medical oncologists. Now, how would listeners find out more information about the technology? Would they go to the website, or what do you suggest they do to find information?
We do have a website. It's allergenist.com, www.allergenist.com. And there's a lot of information on that website. It's not primarily geared towards caregivers or patients. It's primarily geared towards scientific understanding for providers as well as other researchers. On our website, caregivers that are interested in accessing the technology, there's a contact button at the top right-hand corner, and there's a form to fill out, and we will follow up directly with the caregiver around the information that they're seeking. And where we can, as I said previously, we'll let them know in the geography which allergists are offering the technology. And if we haven't already set up an allergist, we'll work our hardest to facilitate the appropriate conversation.
That is wonderful. Thank you for sharing that. Now, I totally want to switch gears and ask you just something really fun. So I understand in your background, you were with the Air Cavalry. Okay, I am dying to know, what exactly is the Air Cavalry and what did you do? You are a fascinating person and I just cannot help but ask this question, because to me, I'm imagining, I don't know what I'm imagining, but I see you in the military and now here you are over head of innovation. I need to know, what is Air Cavalry and how did you get to where you're at today?
Well, the best visualization may be from a movie, Apocalypse Now, where a flight of helicopters were flying over the ocean, blasting Wagner, The Ride of the Valkyries, and they were wearing black Stetsons. The cavalry is a age-old kind of a military unit, date way before the United States. They were horse-mounted. The cavalry then went from horses to mechanized vehicles and then to helicopters. So the cavalry is still used today. But air cavalry is that forward element in a battle that's carried by helicopters. I had two roles. I was an attack helicopter pilot, and I was also a scout pilot before I was an air troop commander. And how did I get here? When I left the military 30 years ago, my first role outside of the Army was as a sales rep for a diagnostic laboratory. And that diagnostic lab focused on medical oncology. And we brought to the clinic diagnostic tools that were only available in research. So medical oncologists at Dana-Farber, Montefiore, at Cedars-Sinai, at Mayo, medical oncologists at those facilities had access to these unique tools, these unique biomarkers, but a clinician didn't. So Dynon Systems, that laboratory, was charged with bringing innovations out of research for use in the clinic. From that launching pad, I stayed in diagnostics and stayed with companies that were bringing new innovations to help caregivers and providers deal with different health conditions. So I've never worked for a company that was marketing yet another test. I've always worked for companies that had something new and different and a leap in technology or a leap in the utility, always delivering something needed in the clinic, not something that we were just trying to capture market share, but something that truly, truly was an impact. The way I got to Allergenist was just through a fortunate phone call. Somebody asked me if I was interested and if I would talk to Hugh Sampson about his research. And it only took one meeting to be able to convey what he was after.
That's an amazing story. So now what do you see as the future of Allergenist? Where would you like to see the company and the diagnostics 5 years from now?
Well, we believe that we're going to be a real asset to that food allergy community. Those allergists that treat food allergy, ultimately allergists who don't treat food allergy could use a tool like this to help triage the patient. And then ultimately, pediatricians. The first place a mom goes when a child reacts is the pediatrician, not to an allergist. So not in the near term, but in the future, our technology will play an important role at the primary care physician level, helping to discern right away if the reaction or this phenomenon that the mom observed, if it was related to a particular food or not. If it was related to food, the pediatrician doesn't need to keep that patient. They would refer it to the allergist. So we don't propose that we're going to disrupt what's happening today in that referral. We believe that will just enhance it and make it more efficient. In the long term, we see this technology being used in a widespread way from primary care physicians all the way through the specialist.
It is so exciting to see how technology has risen up and how it's just moving us forward. You know, like I said, my son was diagnosed 20 years ago. And from that to now is just stunning and exciting. I mean, the conversations I'm having now are ones I never thought were going to happen in my lifetime. So I'm so pleased and excited for people like you and Allergenis and all the other companies who are moving forward and helping collaborate. So before we wrap up, what else would you like our listeners to know about Allergenis and diagnostic testing?
Well, there was a very important milestone last week when Nestle Health Sciences acquired Amune. That multi-billion dollar, multinational corporation coming into the space, coming into the indication, really validates the importance. It also will be a significant driver of innovation. So to be able to have Nestle come in and bring to bear the resources necessary, not only for Amune, but other companies, not only will take note, we already know from traffic, from the buzz, that it changed the landscape. And with the advent of therapies, we know that the ambiguity around diagnostics has to be solved. So it's really exciting for Allergenis as well. But for the caregiver, the idea that you don't know whether or not you should avoid a food, the allergist saying, we're doing the best we can. These are the tools I have. I have to apologize and tell you to avoid peanut and carry two EpiPens until we can figure it out. That's literally going to change. And it's not just Nestle, but it's all of the effort, Allergenis being part of that, but it's all of the effort that has really come to bear over the last several years, not even the last 5 years, but over the last 3, I'd say maybe 4 years, but since the LEAP trial, the New England Journal of Medicine pivotal article, a lot has changed and a lot will advance very rapidly now because of companies like Allergenis and Nestle and the focus that we're bringing.
These are definitely exciting times. I know our listeners appreciate, again, innovation and everyone who's working so hard. So it's really exciting that we're finally getting really good information out here and tools to really help us as parents. I mean, I've been in this game for 20 years with my son, and there's so many challenges in avoiding certain foods and you know, the quality of life. Yeah. So it's just absolutely stunning to see such an advancement taking place and then thinking about where we're going to be in the future.
Oh, you're right. You're right. We're really excited to be part of it and helping to shape that narrative. And we're always happy to be at the table, too. So we very much appreciate the invitation today.
Jim, I want to thank you for your time. I know you're super, super busy. I hope to have you again in the show.
Anytime. Love to come back.
Thank you for being with us today. We totally look forward to speaking to you again in the future.
All right, Caroline. Thank you.
Thank you all for listening to Facts Roundtable Podcast. Stay tuned for future episodes coming soon. Please subscribe, share, and review our podcast, and be sure to connect with us on social media. You can find us on Apple Podcast, iTunes, Google Podcast, iHeartRadio, and Spotify. Have a great day, and always be kind to one another.